All right, ready to dive in. Today, we're tackling a topic that's been generating quite a buzz in the medical world lately: sarcopenia. You've sent over some fascinating recent studies on this, and I have to say, I'm already intrigued.
Yeah, it's definitely an area that's getting more attention these days, and for good reason.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, let's start with the basics. For those who might not be familiar, what exactly is sarcopenia?
You know how everyone's always worried about bone loss as you age? Osteoporosis.
Right.
Sarcopenia is kind of like its lesser known cousin, except instead of bones, it affects your muscles. We're talking about losing muscle mass and strength.
Okay, that makes sense. But these studies you've shared suggest it's a much bigger deal than just, say, not being able to lift as much weight as you used to.
Exactly. It's not just about getting a bit weaker as you get older, although that is part of it. It's really a much bigger deal.
In what way?
One of the things that makes sarcopenia so concerning is how incredibly common it is, even in people who aren't necessarily senior citizens.
Really? I was about to ask if this is something that only older adults need to be concerned about.
It's definitely more common as we age, but it's not limited to older adults by any means. In fact, one of the studies you sent looked at liver transplant recipients,
okay,
and they found that a whopping 40.7% of them had sarcopenia.
40%? That's almost half. I have to admit, I'm surprised by that number.
It's pretty eye-opening, right? And it gets even more interesting when you start looking at other patient groups.
Like who?
Well, for instance, almost 25% of people with chronic kidney disease have sarcopenia. And for those undergoing TVI, that's a minimally invasive heart procedure, the number jumps to nearly 50%.
Wow. Okay, those are some significant numbers. Mm. It really highlights that this isn't just an old age problem, as many might think. Are there any clues as to why we're seeing these high rates of sarcopenia in such diverse groups of people?
That's what researchers are trying to figure out.
It's probably not a simple answer, I'm guessing.
Not at all. It's likely different depending on the condition. For example, with heart conditions, the condition itself can sometimes contribute to muscle loss, so that might help explain the high prevalence in TBI patients.
Makes sense.
And then you have something like chronic kidney disease. There are often dietary restrictions and changes in metabolism that can impact muscle health, which could play a role there.
So it's not always one clear-cut answer, but rather a complex interplay of factors.
Precisely. And it's something that researchers are really digging into to try to understand those nuances.
Okay, so we're seeing high rates of sarcopenia across different groups of people. But the big question is, why does it matter? What are the real-world consequences of this muscle loss?
Well, that's what makes sarcopenia so crucial to address. It's not just about having weaker muscles.
Right.
It's about what that means for your health overall. It's a risk factor for a whole bunch of other issues.
Like what? Give me an example.
Let's take surgery, for example.
Okay.
There was this large review. They looked at data from over 97,000 patients.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
Right. And they found that the patients who had sarcopenia going into surgery were significantly more likely to experience complications. They had higher mortality rates.
So even if you're generally healthy, going into surgery with sarcopenia is a really big deal.
It's a major red flag, absolutely.
Is that true for any surgery? Or are certain types riskier than others if you have sarcopenia?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, certain types of surgery are definitely riskier for people with sarcopenia. Oncological surgeries, for example, are a big one.
Cancer surgeries.
Right. Cardiovascular surgeries. Emergency surgeries, those are all particularly concerning for patients with sarcopenia. And liver transplants, too, which we know is, well, knowing how common sarcopenia is in those patients.
Right, right. It's kind of a double whammy.
Exactly. And it makes sense when you think about it. Surgery, no matter how routine it might seem, it puts stress on the body, right? So if you're already starting out with less muscle mass and strength, your body just isn't as equipped to handle that stress and bounce back quickly.
That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like if someone is facing surgery, even if it's planned and they seem healthy otherwise, getting screened for sarcopenia should be part of the conversation with their doctor.
100%, yes. Early detection is key.
Okay, so we've covered surgery.
Yeah.
What about chronic diseases? How does sarcopenia play into managing those?
That's another area where the research is very clear. Sarcopenia makes it harder to manage chronic diseases and increases the risk of poorer outcomes.
Is that true for any chronic disease, or are there specific ones where we see this connection really strongly?
We see it across the board, but there are definitely some standouts in the research. chronic kidney disease, which we touched on earlier. And there's also a connection with something called MASLD, which is a type of fatty liver disease.
MASLD. I've actually never heard of that.
It stands for a metabolic dysfunction-associated steatohepatitis.
Okay, I'm going to need to break that down a bit. What exactly is that?
Yeah, it's a mouthful. Essentially, it's a fancy way of saying fatty liver disease that's linked to things like obesity and diabetes.
Okay, got it. So how does sarcopenia play into this type of liver disease?
What's concerning is that research shows having sarcopenia on top of MASLD is associated with a higher risk of dying.
Wow.
And even that's not the whole picture. For instance, they found it was even more prevalent in Asian patients and in males.
So again, it's not one size fits all. It affects different groups in different ways.
Exactly.
It's really starting to feel like sarcopenia has its fingers in everything.
It's a bit like that game Jenga, you know?
Jenga, okay.
You pull out one seemingly small piece, in this case, muscle mass and strength. And suddenly, the whole tower becomes a lot more unstable.
I love that analogy. Yeah. And it makes me even more curious about the why behind all of this.
Yeah.
We've established that sarcopenia is common. It affects a wide range of people. And it's linked to some pretty serious consequences.
Hmm.
But why? What is it about this loss of muscle strength and mass that throws such a wrench into our health?
It's the million-dollar question, right? And it's one that researchers are working hard to answer. While there isn't one single explanation, there are some really fascinating theories emerging from the research.
Shane, I'm listening.
One of the most compelling lines of research focuses on something called the Systemic Immune Inflammation Index.
Systemic Immune Inflammation Index. Okay, that's a mouthful. What is that exactly?
Basically, it's a measure of inflammation throughout your body.
Okay, so more inflammation equals worse health outcomes, I'm following so far.
Right. And what's interesting is that studies are showing a strong link between sarcopenia and elevated levels of this inflammation index.
Interesting. So it's not just that you have weaker muscles. It's that this muscle loss seems to be tied to a whole cascade of inflammatory processes that can impact your health on a systemic level.
Exactly. And that brings us to some of the potential reasons why sarcopenia seems to have such a negative impact. For instance, when your muscles start to waste away, it can actually compromise your immune system.
Oh, wow.
Making you more vulnerable to infection.
Which is not what you want, especially if you're already dealing with something like we were just talking about surgery.
Exactly. That's a perfect example. Your body is already working overtime to heal and fight off any potential infections.
Right. Then you want to add more fuel to that fire.
Right. Exactly. And it's not just infections.
Well, what else?
There's a growing body of evidence showing that sarcopenia is linked to impaired wound healing as well.
Really? So it's harder for your body to recover.
Essentially, yes. Your muscles actually play a vital role in your body's ability to repair itself.
Huh. I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah, it's easy to think of our muscles as just being there for movement.
Right, right.
But they're involved in so much more than that. So when they're not functioning optimally, it can really slow down that entire healing process.
Okay, so we've got this connection to increased inflammation, a weakened immune response, and problems with wound healing. Is there anything else? Or is that the main gist of it?
Well, this might surprise you, but there's even research looking at how sarcopenia might be tied to cognitive decline.
Wait, really? You're saying there's a potential link between muscle loss and our brain health? That's wild.
Yeah, it's definitely an area of ongoing research, so we don't have all the answers yet. But the emerging evidence is interesting, to say the least.
So what's the thinking there? Why would our muscles have anything to do with our brain health?
One theory is that our muscles aren't just for movement. They actually release substances that might play a role in maintaining brain health.
Fascinating. So it's like our muscles are sending little messages to our brains, helping them stay sharp.
That's a great way to put it.
I like it.
But when muscle mass and function decline, these beneficial signals may be disrupted, potentially contributing to cognitive impairment over time.
Wow, this is really making me rethink how I view my muscles.
It really highlights how interconnected everything is. It's not just about heart health or bone health or brain health. It's all connected.
It's like that old saying, everything's connected. But this really drives it home.
Exactly. It's about taking a holistic approach to health and aging.
Okay, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier. Falls. You said that's a major concern for people with sarcopenia, especially older adults. Can you elaborate on that a bit? What's the connection there?
Sure. Well, as we age, we naturally lose some muscle mass and strength, yeah. Right? But when you add sarcopenia to the mix, it really accelerates that decline, making even those simple movements like getting up from a chair or navigating stairs much more challenging, potentially dangerous even.
And when you say dangerous, we're talking about falls, right? Which can be really serious, especially as we get older.
Exactly. We're talking broken bones, head injuries, the works.
And I imagine it's not just the immediate injuries, right? There's also the fear factor that comes into play.
That's a really good point. Falls can be incredibly psychologically damaging as well. Even if someone is lucky enough to avoid a serious injury, a fall can lead to this fear of falling again, which is understandable.
Of course.
But what happens is they might become more hesitant to move around, which then further decreases their activity levels, which then unfortunately can actually worsen their sarcopenia.
Oh, wow. So it becomes this vicious cycle.
Exactly. And it can really snowball quickly. And beyond the physical risks, there's also a huge impact on someone's quality of life to consider.
Right. That's such an important point.
Yeah.
It's not just about physical health. It's about overall well-being.
Absolutely. Imagine a future where even simple, everyday activities become difficult or even impossible to do independently. That's the reality for many people living with untreated sarcopenia, and it can lead to loss of independence, social isolation, and even feelings of helplessness or depression.
This is all starting to sound a bit bleak. Is there any good news here? What can we do about this?
Here's the good news. We don't have to just sit back and let sarcopenia take over. The more we understand about this condition, the more we realize we have the power to intervene and change the trajectory, and that's what's really exciting.
Okay, so there's hope. And I know that's what everyone listening is waiting to hear. What can we actually do about sarcopenia? Give us the good news.
All right, so the million-dollar question, right? What can we do? And the good news is there are things we can do. And the research you sent over, it actually offers some really promising answers. We touched on this a bit earlier, but one of the most exciting areas of research is in what's called multi-domain interventions.
Yes. We talked about that briefly in part two, but I'm ready to dive in a little deeper now. Can you remind me what that involves?
Okay, so instead of just addressing one aspect of sarcopenia, say just diet or just exercise, imagine a multi-pronged approach, right? You're tackling it from different angles all at the same time to try to get the best results.
Yeah.
That's essentially what a multi-domain intervention is trying to do. And typically it combines things like physical activity, nutrition, and even sometimes cognitive training.
It's like creating a personalized recipe for healthier muscles,
yeah.
Right? You're hitting it with everything you've got.
Mm. Exactly. A really good analogy. And just like a good recipe, the ingredients all kind of work together to create something really amazing. So you've got exercise, which helps build and strengthen muscles. You've got a balanced diet that's providing those crucial building blocks for muscle growth. And then you're even throwing in those brain workouts, keeping your mind sharp, which, as we discussed, might also play a role in maintaining those important connections between the brain and muscles.
Right. It all comes back to that mind-body connection. I love it. So where do we even begin? Let's say someone's listening to this and they're thinking, okay, I'm ready to take charge of my muscle health. What's my first step?
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them?
Well, the most important first step is always, always talk to your doctor. They can help assess your individual risk factors, determine if you need any specific tests, and they can help you create a safe and effective plan that's tailored just for you and your needs. But generally speaking, there are a few key areas I always recommend people focus on.
Okay, I'm ready. Lay it on me.
Uh-huh.
What are your top tips for tackling sarcopenia?
All right, so first up, physical activity, and more specifically, resistance training. This is where we really target those muscles and encourage growth. We're talking lifting weights, using resistance bands, or even just using your own body weight for exercises like squats, push-ups, and lunges.
So not just hours on the treadmill.
While aerobic exercise like walking, swimming, it's fantastic for overall health, and it should definitely be part of a well-rounded routine. Resistance training is really the MVP here, the key player when it comes to actually building and preserving that muscle mass.
Got it. Strength training it is. But what about fueling those workouts? What should people be eating to really support muscle health?
Well, think of it this way. You wouldn't expect a car to run on empty, right? Our muscles need the right fuel to function properly, to repair themselves. And that fuel comes from a balanced diet that's rich in protein.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
What types of foods are we talking about here? Give me some examples.
Oh, there are so many delicious options out there. Lean meats like chicken, fish are excellent sources of protein. Beans, lentils, eggs, nuts, seeds, don't forget those. And dairy products like Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, those are good too. Just watch the fat content.
Yeah. I'm already getting hungry just thinking about all of that. Now, one more question about protein. Is it important to eat it at a specific time of day? Or is it more about just making sure you're getting enough of it overall?
That's a great question. There is some research that suggests that spreading your protein intake throughout the day, rather than just, say, having one big protein-heavy meal, may actually be more beneficial for something called muscle protein synthesis, which is just a fancy way of saying, you know, building and repairing muscle tissue.
Interesting. So maybe a little protein with every meal and snack.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got strength training, we've got a protein-rich diet. What about the cognitive training piece of the puzzle? I'm still a little curious about that. How does that fit in?
Right. And it might seem a bit odd at first, but remember that connection we talked about earlier between our brains and our muscles? Well, engaging in activities that challenge your brain can actually play a role in maintaining muscle health, too.
So keeping our brains active can actually help keep our bodies strong. I love that.
That's the idea. Things like puzzles, brain games, learning a new language, even just being socially active, engaging in conversations that stimulate you, these activities can help maintain those crucial brain connections. And those connections are what send the signals to your muscles. So this can potentially improve coordination, balance, maybe even reduce your risk of falls.
It's amazing how interconnected everything is. Taking care of your brain is just another way to take care of your muscles and vice versa.
I love that. It all goes back to that holistic approach we were talking about. And the exciting thing is, none of this has to be overwhelming. You don't have to become a bodybuilder or a brain surgeon overnight to make a difference.
That is very reassuring. So for someone who might be feeling a little overwhelmed, maybe a little intimidated, they're not sure where to start, what would your advice be to them?
My advice is always start small and focus on progress, not perfection.
I love that. Small, sustainable changes.
Exactly. Because even those small changes, they can have a huge impact over time. So instead of trying to completely overhaul your entire life, maybe just pick one or two things that you can realistically incorporate into your routine.
Give me some examples. What would that look like in real life?
Okay, so maybe it's adding a 20-minute strength training session twice a week. Totally doable, right? Or maybe it's incorporating some more protein-rich foods into your breakfast and lunch. Doesn't have to be this huge monumental shift. Whatever it is, make it manageable for you and celebrate those small victories along the way.
That is such great advice, and I think it's an important reminder for all areas of health, not just when we're talking about sarcopenia. Start small, celebrate those wins, and just keep building from there.
Exactly. And remember, it is never, ever too late to start making changes that can benefit your muscle health and your overall well-being.
This has been such an insightful deep dive. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And for our listeners, we want to hear from you. What resonated most with you today? What actions are you feeling inspired to take? Share your thoughts and join the conversation on our social media channels. Until next time, keep those brains buzzing, those bodies moving, and stay curious, everyone.